Are you ready to realize the true potential in your life and help others do the same? Get equipped to create a thriving future with the Secrets of Success podcast. Inspire others to live, lead, and work on purpose, and experience the joy of watching satisfaction and productivity come to life. And now, here's your host, Dr. Ken Keyes.
Welcome to the Secrets of Success podcast with Dr. Ken Keyes. Well, it's a pleasure to serve you for another session with you, and today it's the Quest for Purpose Part 2. You know, in my first part of the quest, we really talked about meaning, developing the whole person, but we also went through the stats, if this is the first time that you're listening, that the majority of people, nearly 90% of the population, don't even like what they do. And only 10% of the population are realizing or having a life or living a life of purpose. So what can we do about it? Well, that's why I wrote the book, The Quest for Purpose. And this is what the purpose of these podcasts are, is to be able to help those individuals out there, any of us at any level, even if we're being very successful, how can I fine tune my life to take it to the next level? Well, in part two, I really want to talk about two chapters in the book that really are new work for us, but also, for the most part, are not included in many of the other books on life purpose. So we find out what our purpose is, we find out our direction, but what I also discovered is that there are certain characteristics and also a certain kind of mindset that those individuals who are most successful embrace. So today in this podcast, we're going to cover that. And so even if you aren't in a purpose journey right now and you're doing what you love, this podcast would apply to any of us where we want to be more successful, more in the zone, and really embrace the characteristics, the qualities, the traits of those individuals who have gone before us who are exemplifying, you know, the highest level of achievement, but really also of well-being and of fulfillment. So let's just jump right into it as we think about the quest for purpose. Is the chapter in the book is called, Do You Have a Winning Mindset? You know, one of the first items I put down there is this whole concept of fear. If we think about our society now versus maybe a couple hundred years ago, and maybe there was a lot of fear back then, but it's never been propagated quicker and faster through social media. You know, if a disaster happens, it's not 3 seconds later that it's on Facebook, it's on Twitter, it's on LinkedIn, it's on YouTube. You have Facebook videos now, it's on Instagram, whatever new social media element or software that's going to be launched today that we don't even know about. And so if you don't watch it, if you're not careful, the input in our lives is going to be fear-based. So those, if we think about the news, what is it about? Is there a lot of positives in the news? Really not at all. So the question we have to ask ourselves and yourself, regardless if you're living on purpose or not, is do I have a fear-based mindset? Or am I, because fear, there is nothing beneficial to fear. Fear, many times it was called false education appearing real. But fear is really faith in elements that haven't happened yet, or in worry of things that could happen that 97% of the time never happen anyways. So why would I put all that energy? And it just, you know, if you have some individuals around you that all they do is worry and fuss about all that's going on, is that it's lots of drama. It's draining. You know, our mind, I talked about in our first podcast in the quest in part one, is that we really are spiritual beings having a physical experience. Our mind, according to researcher Dr. Carolyn Leaf, is that our mind is designed to operate in love and not to operate in fear. And that fear actually creates toxic thoughts, but toxicity within our brain, within our mind, within our body. And so just even the concept that fear is okay is not. And there's a lot of individuals out there who say, well, you know what, it's my job to worry. No, it isn't. You know, if I think about my spiritual background, worry is actually a sin. So worry is not something, how does it benefit us? So I want to challenge everybody that's listening to this is, do you have a fear-based mindset or not? And the other one is that when we have friends or family who are fear-based, one of the things we have to do, and I'm not suggesting that if you have a partner that is fear-based that you would abandon them, not that at all. But if you have family or friends where you have some options, maybe we need to limit our time around them. Maybe we need to embrace individuals who are more positive, more uplifting. And so a lot of times we have fear from individuals where it seems to be well-meaning worries. So I'll give you an example. I mean, my kids were fortunate enough to go to a high school that had a drag racing team. And both my son, Tim and Stephanie, even though there was only two students chosen each year, because they were in different years, they each got chosen to run the school's number one drag car. And so in high school racing in our area, the maximum speed quarter miles that they could do is 12 seconds. And if you convert that backwards, it's around 115 to 120 miles an hour that they're doing at the end of the track. So here I had my 16-year-old daughter who got the best time in 5 years in the high school, doing 120, 125 miles an hour at the end of the track, because you never lift off before you go across the red line and across the end of the quarter mile track. And one of my staff members who had a 16-year-old son said to me, he says, you know what? I would never let my 16-year-old son do that. So here's my daughter who is not even licensed to drive a car on the road on her own yet, who is doing 120 miles at the end of the quarter mile. You know, if I use my staff member's frame mindset of fear, of worry, of concern, then my kids would never have had that experience and be able to run a drag car. And I would have hindered that and withheld that from them. Now, it's not to say that we didn't have taking care of the safety issues and they weren't wearing the right equipment and helmets, et cetera. We did all of that as a responsible parent should and could do. But the reality is that why wouldn't I want them to have the fun and the enjoyment of doing the drag car racing when it was offered to them? And again, what is it that you've hindered yourself? The other side around fear, and I was just reading the newsletter from one of my mentors and also colleagues, Dr. Alan Weiss, who's written 63 books. He said, you know what? Fear is usually around a fear of failure. But really, the most successful individuals have failed. And that failure is not failure in itself. It's a way that you learn. It's a way that you grow. If you don't try because of fear, then you will never achieve anything. So one of my encouragements today is as we think about purpose, is that maybe you need to try something new. Maybe you don't know what direction you're supposed to be going in, but it's fear that's holding you back. Or maybe it's somebody else's fear that really is saying to you, oh, I wouldn't try that. I remember when I was leaving my sales job, and I was the number one sales rep for an agricultural company. And then I had been there for 3.5 years, and I had tripled the sales and done well. But when I was leaving to start my own sales training business, which got me into my passion and my purpose, my dad said, why would you possibly leave a job like that that has a car that comes with it, an expense account for meals? And so it was interesting. It was his fear. It's his worry that was trying to transfer to me so that I wouldn't make a decision that was my life. You know what? Nobody can lead your life except for you. And so listening to other individuals who are naysayers or worriers or have fear isn't going to benefit you. Now, I'm not suggesting that you wouldn't get some wise counsel and that there are some individuals who've gone before you that you can learn from, that you can gain from. And I'll talk about that in a minute as far as some of the characteristics and traits of winners and successful people and people who are living a purpose. But really, take stock right now. You know, are you a person of fear? Do you worry? Do other people that worry? The other one is, this is Marshall Goldsmith, and Dr. Marshall Goldsmith has been kind enough to endorse my book, Deliberate Leadership, and he's ranked as one of the top 5 coaches in the world. But he has a section in his book, and it was interesting, I added it here, and I reference that in this book, Triggers, is that we have a society who really looks up to the person who's been very, very successful, except for the people that are right beside them, and they say, well, that's good enough. Dr. Marshall calls it the good enough disease. you know what, that's good enough. Well, who says it's good enough? Who says that that's enough to be able to kind of achieve that? And so while you worked hard enough, take the rest of the day off. You know what? One ice cream cone's not going to wreck your diet. You know what? You could start running tomorrow. Let's just go out for pizza right now. You know, I can't see what drives you so hard. So there's individuals around you who takes this good enough, and it really are lazy and they're weak. And there's also sort of the bullies that are around you as well that kind of come into play with that as well. So again, just encourage you, you know, are you living in fear? Only you know that, and that really all of us at some time or another are going to fail. So don't be using that as an excuse. Now, one of the research studies that I quoted in the book is Dr. Martin Seligman's work, Learned Optimism. And I said, you know what? What do the most successful people, how do they think? So what if I'm living on purpose? If I lose track of that, if I'm not really embracing it, if I know I'm supposed to be, let's say, a music artist, but I don't do any tracks or I don't write any songs, so what? So one of the things, and let me just take a moment to kind of explain his research, and we use this with Dr. Martin Seligman's permission, and I've included it as a grid in the book. But Martin did a 25-year study of individuals that were very successful. He also took his students and he used a concept called CAVE, which is analyzing people's speeches as far as the political arena. And with over 90% accuracy, his students were able to predict who won the political race, even though they didn't know the person's name or anything, based on their language. So let me just go through it. Learned Optimism talks about and verified that individuals who are optimistic are far more successful than those individuals who are pessimistic. And there are three components that lead into measuring my optimistic or my pessimistic view. Individuals who are optimistic and pessimistic, they see and they view the same event differently. So first of all, it's how we see an event affecting us. So let's say a negative event occurred. Maybe I was trying to sell something and they said no to me. Well, a negative or a pessimistic individual says, oh no, you know what? I did a poor job. I didn't really sell that person well. I could have done way better. And so they actually beat themselves up over this failure to sell somebody who didn't buy for them. In addition to that, they say, you know what? They take this negative event and they expand it into the rest of their lives. She says, not only am I a failure at work, I mean, I can't get any dates, or, you know, I can never kind of manage my diet, and I'm just kind of a mess health-wise, and none of my relationships really work. And so they expand that into other circles in their life. And in addition, the third item is that they expand that into the future. So, you know what? I don't know if I'm ever going to sell anybody. And so not only it's the negative event that they own, the negative event then starts to permeate other parts of their life, and then they don't even see that changing into the future. Now, the optimistic individual sees that differently. Let's say it's a negative event and I don't get that sale. Well, an optimistic individual will frame it this way. You know what? I did my best to sell Ken that product. And, you know, he just wasn't interested in this at this time. And, you know, that's his prerogative. And I did my best. Number two, and by the way, I might even frame it out as an optimistic that, you know what, it's his loss in not working with us because we would have offered the best customer service in spite of his review. The next thing that an optimistic person does is they contain that loss to that event. They don't expand it out into everything else, as far as other parts of their life. And then they also contain it time-wise, meaning, you know, this is just a transactional event. You know, I'm going to probably sell several people, other people this week. I mean, I just sense that all my other work that I've done, the seeds that I've planted will come to fruition. So that's the two different ways that optimistic and pessimistic individual will respond to a negative event. But if we flip that to the other side, how does that work for a positive event? So if I'm optimistic and I get the sale, then how would I respond? So what happens is that optimistic individuals take ownership. Now, it can come across as arrogant, but what the research showed is that people own their wins. They own their success. So if I sold Ken the product or service that I was looking to sell him, and he said yes to it, then if I'm optimistic, my mindset would say, you know what, I worked hard to get that sale. And I did a good job to be able to get that sale. And I could see how he'll buy more in the future. And you know what, I'm not only good at sales. So what the optimistic person does when it's a win, they not only own that win, but they take that win in that positive and they go and they put it into the future. And so they set that right into the future as far as going further for them. So that possibility is that, you know what, not only am I good at sales now, is that, you know, I'm going to be selling him for the next, 10 years. And they also take that win and they permeate it throughout their entire life. You know what? My whole life really rocks right now. I mean, I'm health-wise, I'm able to be disciplined. I've got lots of good friends. Relationships are strong. You know, I really enjoy my career. And so an optimistic individual really takes that and then takes that energy, because individuals are contagious. And so this positive energy from themselves, this optimism, carries throughout the rest of their life. Now, interesting enough, a pessimistic individual, they get the sale, they win. But here's how they usually respond. And this is, there's an assessment in Learned Optimism, so I encourage that you get the book. But I also have a summary of this with Martin's permission in The Quest for Purpose. So when you get the book, The Quest for Purpose, it will be in there for you to be able to do this review and look at it carefully, because you really want to study this and study our language and say, you know, be accountable for what I'm saying in my environment. The law of attraction works in terms of optimism and pessimism, and it's proven through this 25-year study. So the negative or pessimistic individual, when they get a win, they don't own the win. They said, you know what? I just got lucky. You know, I don't even know why Ken bought from me. I think he just bought because he felt sorry for me. And you know what? And then what they do is they contain that win to that event. So they might say, you know what? I might have got this sale, but the rest of my life kind of sucks. And I don't really see that my sales are really going to improve into the future. So they hinder, or they don't see this positive thing going into the future, so they contain it to that moment and they actually don't own that positive. So being optimistic and pessimistic, your mindset around that is very, very critical. Now, Martin Seligman teaches people how to reframe their language, reframe their thoughts so that they can be more successful. And he's been so successful with it that the Girl Scouts of the U.S. have hired him to create happiness clubs. Because if we think about it, and having a daughter, if we think about young girls from 8 to 15, are they ever under peer pressure? And so what they wanted to do is, rather than have this low esteem, this low thought about themselves, is that Martin and his team would teach the girl guides on how to use language so that they would have an optimistic language, not a pessimistic language. You know what? It doesn't matter what condition you're in right now. And if you're pessimistic about being pessimistic, you can learn the language and transform your life just by doing that. In some cases, you don't have the purpose in life because you've been so pessimistic. You haven't really believed in yourself, or believed that you're worthy, or believe that you're worth it. So I encourage that you would get the book and take a look at that as far as your mindset. Now, in the few minutes, you know, the 15 minutes or so that we have left, I want to quickly go through what I believe, there are many, what I believe are some critical, what we call characteristics and qualities of individuals who are the most successful, but also contribute at the highest level. You know, and I'm just going to go through these fairly quickly. And then we're going to eventually, we're going to have, you know, get the book and be able to see this in depth. And then we'll be able to have some training programs around this. So pay attention for those. Maybe they're already launched by the time you listen to this. So when we think about on-purpose character traits, one of the ones that we have there is a spirit of forgiveness. You know, a lot of times when people say, I'm never going to forgive Ken for what he did there, there's a saying that a speaker said, and I don't claim the creation of it, But their comment was, is by having unforgiveness in your heart, it's equal to you taking the poison and expecting the other person to die. Unforgiveness affects your brain and your soul and your heart. It lowers your immune system. Bitterness affects just your whole body and your whole system. And so this idea that I can't forgive that person because it was so heinous, it was so terrible, it was so awful what they did. You know, it doesn't matter because we need to. And what I'm suggesting in the book and what I'm suggesting in this podcast, that no matter what the offense, you need to forgive them because that bitterness is going to affect you for the rest of your life. You know, one of the things that Dr. Carolyn Leaf teaches in Who Switched Off Our Brain is a thing called epigenetics, where our mindset, our thoughts can actually affect the genetic code in our body. And we want to be able to pay attention to that. And if we are bitter, if we're angry, then we're actually eroding the immunity cells in our DNA, in our thoughts. And what she proved is that if I take an event and I think about it over and over and over as far as the offense, she can actually prove that 5 years later, if you've not let it go, the offense is 10 or 100 times worse and toxic in your system than it was when it originally occurred, because you are not willing to let it go. And so we have a choice. Every single person that's listening to this has a choice to move into unforgiveness. Now, one of the things I want to clarify, because you forgive somebody does not mean that you agree with that or in any way you think that what they did, the offenses, were okay. That is not what we're saying. We're saying that you're willing to let it go out of your heart, out of your mind, out of your soul. It is just non-negotiable. It is something that you have to do. Number two on the traits is the word integrity. I was had a chance to meet with Dr. Marshall Goldsmith in Dallas a couple of years ago. And, you know, as one of the number one coaches in the world, he says, you know, I do a lot of coaching. I help a lot of individuals, very, very successful CEOs, some of the top companies in the world. But he says, if I start working with my clients who pay Marshall a significant sum, if he finds that they lack integrity, he says, I simply say thank you and then I discontinue our relationship. What Marshall said was, is that you can't coach integrity. And so I'm just suggesting to you, and I know for myself too, is that there are some people who are actually living on purpose, who are doing what they love, but you know what? You can't trust them. And that integrity is this core piece that if you are treating people poorly as far as not being honest, ripping them off. You know, I know one of my cousins was working with an individual who claimed a certain sort of status or claimed certain values. And yet he lied all the time about the work and he was lying about the quality of the work because he didn't want to pay. I mean, that's not living in integrity. And I agree with Marshall. He says that I can't coach integrity. You know, being honest or dishonest is a chosen trait. And if you lack integrity, then what I'm suggesting is you don't deserve, nor will you be living on purpose the way that you could or should. Because as human beings, we really want to interact with people that we trust. And so even Covey's work around the speed of trust, integrity is critical and foundational. And I encourage that you would not actually, you would be not be unequally yoked. And what I mean by that is interacting with and doing business with people who lack integrity will potentially spill off on you and it's not going to go well. And I've made these choices in the past. And unfortunately, I paid the price. My error, my fault, where I worked with individuals, it was my greed many, many years ago, where I got involved with individuals who lacked integrity. Yet the opportunity seemed to be positive, but they weren't. And you know what? I lost a lot. I lost my own integrity. I compromised that. And so my encouragement is that you would just never do that. You know, there was a study done of 24 characteristics. And out of those 24 characteristics, this group, and this is Martin Seligman's group again, they identified what was the number one and number two quality characteristics that contributed to somebody's well-being. And the number one character trait that contributed to people's well-being was the character trait of gratitude and or of thankfulness. You know, you've met these individuals, no matter what they have, they never seem to be thankful. So give an example. If you have two children and one child, no matter what you do for them, they are thankful and they're grateful. I said, Mom, thanks for that new t-shirt. Thanks for that new car. Thanks for those shoes. Thank you for taking me to the sports game or whatever. And then you have another son or daughter or child that no matter what you do for them, it is never good enough. You know what, Mom? I wanted the red shirt, not the blue. I can't believe you bought me these shoes. You know, there's a better shoes. These are terrible shoes. Mom, how come you didn't come earlier to pick me up? You know, when you think about those two examples, who do you want to do more for? Do you want to do more for the thankful and the grateful child? Or do you want to do more for the one who is not thankful and not grateful? Well, it's interesting enough, the opposite characteristics actually supply and happen, meaning the grateful person who says, I have enough, you want to do more for. The ungrateful one who wants more, that's the one you want to do least for or less for. So just think about yourself. Take a moment, this very moment as we are, you know, you're listening to this podcast. What is it that you are grateful for? What are two things that really you appreciate? And the research shows that as soon as you focus on that, as soon as you are mindful of that, your well-being, your immunity is going to improve. You know, one of the things in this society is there, everybody has an opinion about what you're doing and what you're not doing. And so I mentioned in the book, what will others say or think about me? In other words, are you worried about what other people will say or think? Too many individuals, maybe it's you, maybe there's other individuals that you know, are so worried about what others will think and say about choices that they choose not to. They let other individuals run their life, run their business, take sort of charge of their life rather than you worrying about what they're thinking and saying. I remember years ago in our business, we actually stopped doing feedback sheets after our 3-day certification when people learn about our tools and assessments. And the reason being is you know what? I asked the question about how it worked for you. But asking individuals to reframe a speech or redo how we do programs, if I listened to the 100 people who said, do this, do that, do this, do that, pretty soon that program's not my program anymore. If you listen to individuals and what you should or shouldn't do in your life, and you don't take in consideration your own counsel, pretty soon you're living somebody else's life or somebody else's opinion. And interesting enough, in this world of Facebook and likes and open forums, is everybody has an opinion. So the reality is maybe you don't want that. You know, if I wanted your opinion, I would have asked for it, is maybe something that you can hold close to your chest. And so if I'm asking or wanting counsel, I go to individuals who've been very, very successful. I go to individuals who have experience. And then after that counsel, I'll make my own decision. I find it actually a bit amusing where you have individuals who have never been parents who give parenting advice. I am amused by individuals who have never been professional speakers who give advice about how you should speak, how you should talk, what you should do on the stage. I mean, everybody has an opinion. It's actually even sad about how vile and vulgar the opinions are when you go to Facebook or YouTube or any social media outlet where people just have to be that way when it's not necessary, it's not needed. So you know what? Don't worry about other people, what they're going to think or say or do. Live your life. Don't hurt other people, but stay on your path. You know, I talked about the study of 24 characteristics and the qualities that help people to feel this highest level of well-being. Well, second in line, I was actually surprised on what the research came up with. And the second item that caused people to have well-being was the love of learning. You know, right now we live in a society where information age is just crazy. And there's constantly new information that's coming out. But what they're showing is that our well-being, our ability to maintain memories, our ability to maintain brain power is highly influenced by our dedication and our consumption of learning. And I'm not talking about just amusement through social media. I'm talking about what did you learn today? Now, every morning on a weekday, I spend 30 minutes to 90 minutes in newsletters, podcasts, just as you're listening to this podcast, I listen to podcasts of other authors and experts that really feed me and feed the direction that I want to go into. And so I have a health and wellness newsletters I get every morning that I go through and review the articles that are pertinent to me. I have sort of spiritual newsletters that I get that I read. I have other ones on leadership because that's an expertise that we have as well. And so every day I'm taking in at least 60 minutes of learning of some form or another. In many cases, I can't get enough of it. And so what they discovered is that your love of learning, our love of learning, is highly contributes to your well-being. So keep that in mind. You know, when we think about life, and I'm just going to quickly go through the last items as far as characteristics, is avoiding distractions. Social media it can suck your brain out. You know, pardon how I'm describing that. There was a study out of China not that long ago that said that out of the 1.5 billion, 3, 4, 5 billion, whatever it is that they are heading north of 400 million individuals who are addicted to social media or video games. You know, if I was to take your phone away, take your multimedia device away for a day, could you even survive? You know what? It'd be difficult for me. But our distractions, I think what Marshall Goldsmith says best in that is that we might be amusing ourselves to death. So I'm not saying we're not learning. It's really about we have all these other distractions. We have social media, we have games, we have whatever it is. Are we stopping to be able to kind of interact with individuals? You've seen many of these photographs or these videos where you have 5, 6, 7, 8 people around a table, a dinner table, going out for dinner together. And every single one is on their device texting somebody else or on social media or posting something, and they're not talking to each other. So vet out the distractions, be disciplined, be able to kind of take heed of those things that are affecting you that way. The other thing is, you know, when we think about character traits, you got to have some fun in life. So a sense of humor. I used to get very, very upset and angry when people cut me off in traffic. So a little bit a tendency around road rage. And now I just try to have some fun with it. And I say, you know, I don't even know that person. They don't even know me. And I said, maybe I can have some fun with that. Can I kibitz and have fun at work? Can I have kibitz and fun with family? And so are you a sourpuss or do you have a sense of humor? Do you have some fun in life? And, you know, when The Anatomy of an Illness came out with Norman Cousins, he proved that he took in movies, you know, old movies that had humor and clean humor, where these individuals would just be having laughter by watching these fun movies. And that humor improved their immune system. In many cases, they recovered quicker and faster because they were laughing. Because laughing gives positive endorphins into your system. And so there is a biology behind humor in fun that way. You know, three more that I'm going to talk about, and then we'll wrap up this part two of the Quest podcast, is persistence. You know, somebody said, you know, I didn't, in this microwave kind of society, if you don't achieve what you want in 5 minutes, people seem to quit. But I got into this industry almost 30 years ago. And I remember, and I was in my late 20s at that time, and just moving into my 30s. And an individual said to me, you know, that the best speakers, the best trainers are over 40. And the ones that really impact people the most are over 50. And I actually was offended by that comment. I said, no. I think, you know, 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds can contribute. And I agree, they can. And I did. But boy, who I am now versus 10 years ago or 20 years ago or 30 years ago. You wouldn't want to have heard me 30 years ago. Oh, it was terrible. It was awful. And so I just want to encourage you is that if you're in your passion, if you're living your purpose, the fact that it doesn't happen today is welcome to the club. It's taking me 30 years to be able to get to this place, to accumulate 4 million words of content that I've authored and written, as well as the 4 books. But boy, it was a challenge to start with. But so be it. Being persistent. You know, we've heard the research around that it takes 10,000 hours to develop proficiency or excellence? Well, 10,000 hours is basically 10 years. So we want to be persistent. I know even for CRG, which I own now and I've had for 13, 14 years, it's really been the last 5 years that this company has rocked. But boy, at year five, I was wondering. But it was my persistence that continued on that be able to kind of get it to this level. And I encourage the same thing with you. You know, this next characteristic, love, I can't say that it's the easiest for me. And are we in a society in love? And I'm not talking about ethereal and kind of, and I'm not trying to offend anybody with saying hippie love. But do you really care? You know, when we move into a state of love, is that, and Dr. Carolyn Leaf's again work says, we really are spiritually anchored when we're in a spirit of love. We're in a mindset of love, be able to care for other individuals, to be able to serve other individuals. It really should come out of this place of love. I mean, Dr. Wayne Dyer always talked about that, where we could and should be in this place of love where we can tap into divine intervention and divine knowledge in where we can seek to be able to get those insights. And so are we in a spirit of love, and that love really is giving? It's the highest level of contribution. And what Carolyn Leaf and her research proved is that we are designed for love, but also our brain operates, because as a neuroscientist, our brain is the healthiest. And when brain scans are done, are most active and most positive when we're in a spirit or condition or mindset of love, not other conditions. So again, just get the book so that you can go through that further and get grounded on that. And the last item for this podcast, The Quest for Purpose Part 2, is the power of association. You know what? Who do you hang out with? You know, there was some research many years ago, I forget the source, but one of the things it talked about is that your life really will reflect in every way your five closest friends. So what about those friends? Are those friends, and I'm not saying that we are better than those friends, but do those friends represent your purpose? Do those friends represent your goals? Do those friends represent where you need to go? And so one of the things we need to ask ourselves, it's not, you know, we have many friends, but when we think about our five closest friends, is do they really push you? Do they really cause you to go to a higher level? You know, if you're hanging around other individuals, and again, I use this loosely, as a loser, people who are pessimistic, people who have no drive, people who aren't persistent, people who are lazy, then guess what? That's going to rub off on you. And you want to be able to watch that. You want to be able to contain that. You want to be able to be very discerning about who you hang out with. You know, if I'm wanting to grow spiritually, or if I'm wanting to grow from a business wisdom point of view, or just the quality of who I'm trying to become, am I hanging out with other individuals who reflect those values, who reflect those goals, who reflect, you know, who I want to become? You know, we talk about high school kids, and since my children are now in university and growing older, it was interesting, as they were growing up, we found that their character, their responses, what they said and what they didn't say, was highly influenced who they were hanging out with. You know, peer pressure is real. Peer identification is real. So who are you hanging out with? Who are your closest friends? Do these individuals really represent who you want to become? Not because you are better or arrogant in any way towards other individuals. It's really more about your journey and how are the friends or the new friends going to help you to get to that next level? And can you include mentors? Can you include individuals that really take you to the next level so that you can be and become the best possible? Well, you know, this show's been full of content, and that's the benefit of podcasts. You can go back, you can go over and over and listen to it again and again and again. I encourage you that you would get the book, The Quest for Purpose. You can go to questforpurpose.ca, be able to get the book there, get all the resources that kind of support it. If you have some individuals that you know that could benefit from this information, forward this podcast to them. forward the information about the website to them so that we were able to serve and help them. You know, there was research done of individuals that were over 70, and they said, you know, if you were to live your life over again, what would you do differently? And the three things they came up with is, number one, that they would take more risks. And so this goes back to my comments about fear in the beginning of the show. Take more risks. You know, if you bought that property 20 years ago, guess what it's worth now? Number two is that they would take more time for themselves. You know, listen to these podcasts, listen to the series, get into the information, read the book, download it, whatever the case might be. Do it for yourself so that you can contribute at a higher level. And the third item, which is what all of this work is about, is these individuals wanted to be part of something that created a legacy, something that lasted beyond their lifetime. Who could you mentor and help beyond sort of your age? Who could you support? What could you teach? What could you do? You know, when we get into part three and part four, we're going to be talking about assessments and different pieces that you can get clear about so that you can become self-aware. And in part number four, we're going to start taking you through questions and a roadmap on what you need to do to put together your quest journal. You know, I thank you for spending the most valuable thing that you have with us, and that's your time. You've been listening to the Secrets of Success podcast with Dr. Ken Keyes, and I look forward to you listening next time.
Thanks for exploring the secrets of success with us. If you want to keep the momentum going, log on to crgleader.com. Scroll to the bottom and sign up for our inspirational emails. You can also take your success to the next level by following us on Facebook and Twitter and connecting with Ken on LinkedIn. We hope you have a great week and look forward to you joining us next time for the Secrets of Success podcast with Dr. Ken Keyes.